We have a description of the world given to us in 1 John chapter 5 and verse 19. He says, "And we know that we are of God, and the whole world lieth in wickedness." And that's a statement of truth, whatever age that we might be considering. The whole world lieth in wickedness. There's not been a time where we can look at and see the world or describe the world accurately any differently than that. That is very true, of course, in our own present time. This world lies in wickedness, as it did 2,000 years ago when 1 John was inspired of God to be written. In the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 24, Jesus Christ was speaking to his disciples here in verses 12 and 13. He says, "And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved." Jesus identified the truth of the matter that while the whole world lies in wickedness, there are times that are worse than others. There are times that are more where the world is more wicked than others. There are times in which iniquity abounds, and he warns us about that. And what happens to God's children in times in this wicked world when that iniquity abounds, when it is becoming more so? Well, there's a threat to us from this world and the increase in wickedness thereof. He says that because of that iniquity abounding, the love of many will wax cold. Now, those that are of the world, of this wicked world, do they have a love for God? No. So by very definition, he's speaking about whom. In whom would this love exist that it could grow cold? Well, he's talking about his own followers, his own disciples. He's talking about Christians. When this wicked world has iniquity abounding, it's a threat to us, those who are followers of Christ, that our love for the Lord can grow cold during those times. And then he reminds us that it's only those who endure unto the end that will be saved. If our love becomes cold, if we turn to this world and its wickedness, where we are not enduring to the end, we won't be saved. So for us to be saved in the end, we can't just start following Christ. We must start to follow him, but then continue to follow him and endure unto the end. And continue to endure when this world and its wickedness is where we see that iniquity abounding more and more. Why would it behoove us to consider what happens when iniquity abounds? Because it's abounding. I hope it's not necessary for me to spend the remainder of our time this morning, the next 20 minutes or so, for me to try to convince you that iniquity is abounding in this wicked world right now. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think I have to convince you of that. But the Lord does tell us why iniquity does abound and what's going on in the hearts of mankind when it is doing that. And in Romans chapter 1, he shows that this is a reflection of the wickedness of men and that they do not choose to glorify their God as God. And in Romans chapter 1 and verse 18, he says, "The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened." So he's really showing us the root of that, the root cause of the wickedness of this world and why iniquity abounds. It's because mankind does not hold the truth of God in righteousness. And that truth, he says, is his godness and his eternal power. So the fact that we have an eternally powerful creator who is our God that has been revealed and is clearly seen by the creation. So all men know that. There's not anybody, even if they're denying it with their mouths, that they and say they don't believe that there's a God. We all know in our heart of hearts that there is, because we're part of that very proof, our own existence. We didn't make ourselves. We didn't put ourselves here. So there, we all have a creator, and it is our duty then to seek that creator's will. Because he made us, we belong to him, and that's why we must glorify him as God. And we don't have an excuse not to do that. But what do most men do? They hold that truth of God in unrighteousness, that they have a maker that they should serve, and then they choose not to anyway, and their foolish heart is darkened. So they don't have an excuse for it and will not on judgment day. But when that happens, then God responds to that wickedness. His wrath is revealed against it. He would send them a strong delusion, as he's going to talk about in a similar passage. But we want to, before we get there to 2 Thessalonians 2, where we want to go to next, we want to read a little bit more from Romans 1. As he's giving a description of the iniquity that's in this world, if anybody would ask the question, well, what does wickedness look like? When he says the whole world lies in wickedness, what is he talking about? Or if iniquity abounds, what is abounding? Well, he's going to describe it here. When he's describing what happens to the ones who will not glorify him as God, which is the world, he says in verse 22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Now, do we see any in this world today that are wrapped up in iniquity, that profess themselves to be wise and to know so much about what is good and evil and what is right and wrong, that they're very bold and outspoken in saying, here's the way it is or the way it should be and all of these things? We can see so many professing themselves to be wise, but what are they? In God's sight, he says they became fools. And what did they do? Verse 23, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like the corruptible man, into birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. So they turned to idolatry. That's one of the manifestations of this wickedness. Verse 24, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worship and serve the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause, and here's that strong delusion, God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women to change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet. That recompense, that's a paying back, and that error is the word for being deceived or deluded. And it's the same word that's translated strong delusion in the next passage that we go to, but we can see it right here. That's what this world is given, this strong delusion. It's the devil who deceives them, but this is part of God's wrath being poured out on this wicked world. And then they start doing these things, and here are the manifestations of iniquity abounding. When we see these kinds of behaviors abounding, which we certainly do today, he's very explicit about it in this chapter, Romans chapter 1. And in verse 28, he says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. Does that describe our world today? Does this world like to retain God in their knowledge? And what are we seeing more and more? More opposition to that. More and bolder insistence that any mention of God be taken away. And people don't want to be reminded that they have a God, a maker that they need to seek and consider and serve. They don't like to retain God in their knowledge. And he says, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. And here it is. Here's the wickedness of this world from 29 to 32. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. Now, which of these things that he's just mentioned right there do we not see not just present in our world today, but abounding? All of them. All of this is abounding in this iniquity. And he says in verse 32, who know in the judgment of God that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. So there's a description of the wickedness of this world and the mind that's behind it. That mind that does not like to retain God in their knowledge. That mind that will not glorify God as God. And so then with this strong delusion from the devil, then they're filled with all of that wickedness. And we certainly see that abounding today. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. Similar points made in these three verses. He says, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness and them that perish because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. So there's that truth again, that truth of God that he has revealed by the creation, his existence. There is an eternally powerful God that created all things, and it's evident from the creation. But how many people love that truth and want to glorify God as God for it? Very few. In verse 11, he says, and for this cause God shall send them strong delusion. There's that same word that was described as that error that was necessary, that was meet, that God gave as recompense in Romans chapter 1. Here he's using the same word, describing the very same process where God will send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So that's the process of what's going on in the world. Now, at what point does a person first have the opportunity to know that they have a maker? How old do we have to be? Is that something that comes to our knowledge when we are grown and well into our adulthood when that happens? No. That's something that will be known even from youth. And so in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, he gives that warning. Because at what time in a person's life should they give consideration to the God who made them? And then choose to hold that truth of his existence in righteousness by glorifying him as God, turning to him to remember and serve him in their lives. Well, that should be done in youth. Now, what is the tendency of youth? See, this is where things start to go wrong. And this is where that strong delusion will typically first come. In Ecclesiastes chapter 11, in verses 9 and 10, and actually down to chapter 12, verse 1, he says, rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart and the sight of thine eyes. Now, a lot of people would love that verse right there if that's all that was there and there was a period. And then they were saying, well, look, God says when you're young, just follow your heart and enjoy all of that good that you, all of those pleasures that you want to get involved in. That's not what he's doing. That is what the tendency is. He says, you do that, when there's the next part. There's not a period there. The next part says, if a young person does that, if they let their heart cheer them in the days of their youth and walk in the ways of their heart and in the sight of their eyes, which is a tendency of youth, that's when it starts. He says, but know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. So he says, you go ahead and do that, but God's going to judge you for it. So what does he say to do then? Not continue in that. He says, verse 10, therefore remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I had no pleasure in them. And then to go down to the very end of the book, what he concludes for all mankind, this was Solomon's conclusion, but it's a God-given conclusion. It's God's conclusion for man and what is the purpose of man and what we need to do in this life, verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Over and over again, we're reminded that the God who made us is one day going to judge us for how we have spent our time on this earth, whether we have glorified Him as God to seek Him and do His will, or whether we're going to follow after all of these wicked things and iniquities of this world, those that have that strong delusion. But that's not something that we need to start thinking about well down the line in our lives. That needs to start in youth. And that's why he tells the young people, consider that now while you're young. Don't go on this pathway that's going to lead to you having that strong delusion of believing a lie and getting caught up in all of those iniquities. And we all need to remember that at whatever age we are, never forget it. Now, in the Old Testament, the book of Genesis, we find some examples of where people went wrong, and we can learn from that some of the steps that are commonly taken that lead one into that wickedness, and how do we keep our love from growing cold? Well, in Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, he says, "And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose." Now here were these young men that were from this godly line that he traced in this very the previous chapter in Genesis 5 from Adam. Here was this godly seed that was on the earth down to Noah's time. But the problem was, why didn't those godly increase in number? And why did they decrease in number to the point that when it reached Noah's time, he and his family, only 8 souls in all the earth, were righteous before God, where the entire world was lost? How did that happen? Iniquity abounded, and the love of many waxed cold. And to the whole world, except for 8 people, had turned to wickedness. So it was not a situation where as more iniquity abounded that more of God's people saw the dangers of it and chose to avoid it. That's not what happened. More of God's people got caught up in it. And it started with, as he identifies there, those young men that were brought up to know and serve God, these sons of God. They saw these pretty girls of the world, and they went after them. And so then when they mixed with the world, then what happened with their children? Well, their children learned the ways of the world. And then who was left that served God? One family, 8 people, that's all. And what ended up happening to the thoughts of man? Well, he tells us about it here in Genesis 6, verses 5 through 7. And the Lord said, "My spirit shall not always strive." Verse 5. "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repented me that I have made them." Man had reached a point where the thoughts of every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. All evil, all the time. All the world, except for 8 people. That's how far it can go. And that's how far it went at that time. Iniquity abounded, and the love of many waxed cold. In chapter 11, and we know after the flood, Noah's family was saved. The Lord started over with that righteous family. Well, by the time we get to Genesis 11, what do we see? Iniquity has abounded, and the love of many had waxed cold. And as we see the Lord's people will mix with the world, and then they lose their distinctiveness as being God's people, and then their children and grandchildren are all part of the world. That's a problem that happened in Genesis 6. Another problem that he shows in Genesis 11, when you get more than one person together, well, it can go one of 2 ways. When we get more of the righteous together, is that good? Yeah, what happens when we get all of us together, if our mind is to serve Christ? Well, if I'm serving Christ over here by myself and you're over there by yourselves, and that's not the way the Lord intends it to be. He puts us together as the body. When we're together and have that same mind and encourage each other and strengthen one another, build each other up, then how much more righteousness can we accomplish in service to God when we blend that together? Well, that's the way the Lord would have it to be. Now, that's on the positive side, but what happens when you get more people of the world together and they blend their wicked minds together, where the evil imaginations of their wicked hearts join together? What do we see in big cities? Is that where righteousness flourishes? When is it ever? It hasn't. And Genesis 11 is a prime example of what happens when more wicked people, when they get together, the more that are together concentrated in one place, that is a recipe for the abounding of iniquity, as it happened here. He starts in verse 1, "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." That's what happened. Here you had a big city. Everybody congregated together. They could all communicate together. And they put their wicked minds together. And it was a multiplier effect, wasn't it? And so the iniquity was abounding as a result. God said there would not be anything to restrain them in what they've imagined to do. Well, what do we see in our cities today? We see that. We see iniquity abounding. That's where it really is concentrated, and it spreads from there, as it did then. This was the reason why God created all the languages, and that's what that's the birth of it in verse 7. He says, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. And that's what he did, and then scattered men on the across the face of the earth. And so that was the birth of all the different languages. Did God design all those different languages to enrich all the cultures of this wonderful world? No, he wasn't trying to create a giant Epcot Center. What God did by confusing the languages and confounding them was to keep people from being able to communicate with each other so well, because the more they could do that and the more they could concentrate together, then the more evil they were producing. So it was to hinder iniquity from abounding in the world. It was to put the brakes on the wickedness that was increasing. That's what God was doing there. And that's what he had designed to do. Of course, we live in a time now where much of those communications barriers have broken down. People talk about having the world being one village. All that we have as far as communications, and that's something that has been certainly a hallmark of our modern times, with instant communication worldwide. So really we have over 7 billion people in the world all being able to communicate together all at the same time. What do we see as a result? Is it true that Christians, we have all these things. Can we do some good with it? Well, we can use what we got. But if we look at that and think, and every time those new technologies come out, and our response is, oh, isn't this great? Well, what we might use for good in our few numbers, what's the devil doing with all this stuff? Who do you think is the one that's most delighted in all of these advancements and all of these things to bring man so closer together to where you have more and more people communicating together? The devil's having a field day with this. I shouldn't have to tell you that. You can see it with your own eyes. In fact, that's part of the problem. That's a big part of the problem, is trying not to see it with our own eyes, because it's all right there. The devil puts all this right in front of us, all this iniquity. It was a lot more difficult just a few years ago for our young people to be confronted with a lot of the wickedness of this world. It would be a lot easier to shield them from that. But what about now? I mean, it's virtually impossible to keep the vilest things from being right there in front of their eyes each and every day, in spite of our efforts to not have that before them. And that's, I mean, it starts with the young people, but that's a threat to us all. And trying to resist that is a great, great challenge. But we can see how iniquity abounded because of that, as we saw it in Genesis 6. Of course, in Genesis 15, the Lord spoke to Abram, that he would later rename Abraham, and promised him again in chapter 15 that he was going to make of his descendants a great nation, a great number. He was going to give them the land of Canaan. He was going to bless all the nations of the earth through his seed, which would be Christ. He'd already promised those things to Abraham. We see that repeated there, but he also, in Genesis 15, told him that those descendants would have to sojourn in a land, in a strange land that would be Egypt, and they were going to have affliction for 400 years. In verse 16, he said, "In the fourth generation they would come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full." But by those very words, the Lord was letting Abraham know that iniquity of the Amorites was going to abound, and it was going to continue to abound. Over the next four centuries, it would get greater and greater and greater until the wickedness of those nations that were in the land of Canaan at that time was going to be complete. They were going to be completely wicked, not just somewhat wicked. They were going to be fully wicked, all of them. And then they would be worthy of God's judgment, the destruction he brought on them. And so there was going to be that time lag until that happened. But what was the trend going to be over the next 400 years? Was it going to be a trend towards righteousness, or was it going to stay the same? It wasn't going to stay the same, and it doesn't. The iniquity was going to abound. And so those times do occur. 2 Timothy chapter 3, the Lord warns us about this in the New Testament, that we're going to have times where iniquity does abound. And he refers to these times as perilous or dangerous times. They are a danger to Christians. They are a threat to our faith, to our eternity. So in 2 Timothy chapter 3, we want to read here verses 1 through 5. "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, coveted." They're being taught that. This is what young people are being taught to do, to love themselves, to esteem themselves. And you got to love yourself to love anybody else. I mean, there's a great emphasis on this loving of oneself. We can see that selfishness. The very words that he's going to use here, many of them we saw in Romans 1, but he's describing this as examples of perilous, dangerous times where iniquity is abounding. "Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away." So what does he tell us to do? How do we keep our love from growing cold? Well, there he tells us to turn away from it. We've got to turn away from that wickedness and not let ourselves to be influenced by it, not let our love to grow cold from it. But we need to recognize it for what it is, and then we need to stay away from it. We need to We need to flee from evil, as the Lord tells us to do. We have to hate that iniquity and love the good. That is what the fear of the Lord is. What's taught in Psalm 34 and also in the book of Proverbs. We find it in the book of 1 Peter in chapter 3, verses 10 through 12. We're going to close with these with this passage in 1 Peter chapter 3, 10 through 12, where he's teaching us this fear of the Lord. This is what we must have in order for our love for God not to grow cold. He says, "For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil." So he's reminding us here, it's a quotation from Psalm 34, verses 11 to 16, where he said, "Come, I will teach you the fear of the Lord," and he teaches us that. So what is his warning to us as Christians and how not to let our love grow cold? We have to continue to love righteousness and hate iniquity, to turn away from, to flee from that wickedness and all those temptations, to turn away from all of this iniquity that's abounding in the world, so that we can continue to be holy to God and continue to grow in our love for him. The challenge is going to be great for us, young and old, all of us in these times. We don't know what the future holds and how much more this iniquity is going to be abounding in the coming days. It's astounding to me how much has changed in such a short period of time and how much wickedness has abounded in these past few years and the pace of it. I'm not a prophet. I can't predict and tell you what's going to happen in the future. I can look at where things have been and where they are now. The trend isn't good. And I think we can all agree on that, which means the threat to our faith is stronger and greater. We need to have our mind set that we're going to have this fear of the Lord, love righteousness, hate iniquity, that our young people are going to remember their Creator in the days of their youth, and that none of us would forget that, that we're going to continue to seek and serve our Maker to do His will in our lives, no matter how much iniquity is in this present world. Now, this is an opportunity for you at this time, if you've not yet become a child of God, to do so. This is the time to do it. There's no other promise of any more time. So this is certainly the right time to come out from this world, to be separate for God, holy to Him, and turn away from this world and all of its wickedness. If you're ready to come forward and confess your faith in Jesus Christ before men and repent and be baptized in His name for the remission of your sins as the Lord commands us, we're encouraging you to do that now. If you are a member of the Lord's body and if you need to return to Him, need the prayers and encouragement of your brethren here, this is an opportunity for you also. Anyone that needs to come now, please do so while we stand together and sing.